Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown, and today I have the real pleasure to have someone come back to the podcast for the second time, the author of Prototype Politics, Technology Intensive Campaigning, and the Data of Democracy. Our author is Daniel Kreiss, who has been here before. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure to have you back. It's a pleasure to have yet another book in this Oxford series on digital politics. Before we start to talk about your new book and the larger themes of that series, maybe you could just give us a little update about where you are now. Are you still fully employed at the University of North Carolina? Give us your update.
Yeah, so I am, and I'm actually newly promoted to associate professor.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's quite an honor to be an associate professor at the oldest public university in the United States. I have an adjunct appointment over in the Department of Communication Studies at UNC, which is a wonderful collection of scholars, and I'm an affiliate fellow of the Information Society Project at Yale Law School as well.
Yeah, it's wonderful. You came on, I guess, about 2 years ago with your previous book, and your appearance on the podcast did not derail your tenure and promotion, so that's and at least an endorsement of this not being a bad idea. And it was such a pleasure to talk to you then, and so nice to see the way that this larger research agenda is continuing. For that reason, you know, your book is about has so many really interesting details, but I wanted to start with some of the bigger concepts. Would you, for just the sort of sake of contrast, talk about a couple of the big ideas here, and maybe some ideas that have changed over time, which is to define for us the difference between micro-targeting and voter modeling. These are two ideas that seem so important to the ongoing changes in how campaigns use technology, and I think have be, for probably many that don't study this, kind of mean the same thing. They seem to mean something very different. Tell us about those two different ideas.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a great way to start. So one of the big differences between micro-targeting and, you know, more predictive modeling or predictive analytics, there's a number of different terms that practitioners themselves use, but it's this basic move away from targeting groups of people, which was the model under micro-targeting, where at some point during an election or during points in an election, you would go and you would survey and you would find certain groups of voters that might be responsive to your appeals, that might be supporting your candidate, that might be open to persuasion. And these are the things that you heard a lot about, like, during the 2004 election. So one of the things that got a lot of coverage during that election was like, you know, latte drinking liberals in ex-urban areas, those sorts of big demographic groups. And then what campaigns would do is after they define groups that would be advantageous for them, they would design media campaigns to attempt to reach them and appeal to them. So they would figure out who these groups are, what their media habits would be, what sorts of messages might they be responsive to. And then they would buy television advertising and design their political canvassing operations sort of around turning them out. That started to shift around 2008, particularly on the Democratic side of the aisle, when really beginning with the Obama campaign in 2008, but also refined at the Democratic Party during that time and extended during the midterm cycle in 2010 and during the presidential reelect campaign in 2012. Was a move towards more individualized scoring and targeting of voters. So what Obama's folks and the DNC folks sort of figured out was one of the things that you could do is run continual surveys of the electorate, find out lots of different things about different people, and then really layer it on to the voter files that both parties maintain in a way that you would score people's probabilities, individual probabilities, to do certain things or to have certain attitudes. And this really falls into some big buckets, right? It was likelihood of being an Obama supporter, likelihood of being open to persuasion, likelihood of being open to particular types of appeals, and likelihood to turn out on election day. So in sort of the big broad sense, we see a movement from more group-based targeting and group-based modeling to more individual-level predictive modeling that seeks to score individual voters on the basis of the characteristics they share with other known voters who they learn things about through things like surveys.
Now, in your title, you refer to prototype politics. That is your title. What is this concept of a prototype, and how does it relate to the technology of campaigning?
Yeah, so one of the things that I think really came through loud and clear in the course of researching this book was the degree to which all aspects of contemporary campaigning is newly technology intensive. And what I mean by that is that there is a technological component to everything that campaigns do. And whether that entails things like data architectures or voter databases, whether it entails things like iPads and iPhones, whether that entails servers and computers, whether that entails things like social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter, or cable set-top boxes. All of contemporary campaigning now has a new technological dimension. One of the examples that I really like to give actually came from the 2012 campaign, where Obama, the re-election team, had a media analytics group. And one of the things that Carol Davidson, who is the head of that media analytics group, and her team sort of figured out was they could get set-top box data. And what I mean by set-top box is the boxes that cable companies provide, to figure out ways to more efficiently buy television advertising to reach groups of people who are being targeted by the Obama campaign. So even in an area where we tend to sort of think of as being relatively well institutionalized, like campaign television advertisements, that is a newly technological dimension in terms of being premised on new sets of data, data architectures that make that data actionable, algorithms that are designed by engineers to more efficiently get television advertisements in front of voters of interest at particular types of day of the day. And I think part of the broad history that the book tells and part of the reasons why campaigning is newly technologically intensive is simply that it is a lot harder to reach people and get your message in front of people than it was 50 years ago or even 10 years ago. The number of platforms has exploded. The number of ways that people consume media has changed and drastically expanded. The ways that people consume media has changed, so more things like dual screening, for instance. So what campaigns need to do is figure out not only how to build new technologies, but also figure out how do we use data effectively and analytics effectively to make sure that we're getting our messages out in front of the electorate, that we're capturing their attention and ultimately persuading them to vote for our candidate on election day, or, you know, with early voting months in advance. So with this sort of basic idea that technology is new, that campaigning is newly technology intensive, one of the things that I really set out to discover in this book is how is it that campaigns have responded to this new technology intensive era of campaigning? What sorts of skills and expertise does it require? And how have political parties and other entities kept pace with the rapid technological changes that have affected all sectors of society? But even more than that, how do they innovate in this new technologically advanced landscape for a competitive electoral advantage? And one of the things that I discovered in the course of my research for this book was campaigns often learn from what seemed to be successful during election cycles, or prototypes, as I put it. So on the Democratic side of the aisle, the Howard Dean campaign in 2004 was a really important prototype campaign in that it disclosed an entirely new way of campaigning that was internet intensive, that was premised on digital engagement, that was premised on small dollar online fundraising. And what happened was is that after John Kerry lost in 2004, actors across the Democratic Party network were seeking out a new way to do things. And one of the things that they saw in the Dean campaign was an entirely new prototype for a way that a campaign could be run in a new way. I think in many respects, the Obama 2012 campaign was a prototype, particularly for Republicans in the years after that election cycle. So the GOP Growth and Opportunity Project report spoke extensively about the technological sophistication of the Obama 2012 campaign, the ways in which they used technology, digital media, data and analytics to turn out voters, to identify their supporters, to get them to the polls, all led to the Republican Party in the years after 2012 sort of adopting key elements of the Obama reelection bid. So the idea of prototypes was meant to capture ways in which technological innovation and adoption happens within party networks in this new technology-intensive era of campaigning that we're in.
Now, as you just allude to, some of this change relates to the role of the party in modern politics. And you write in the book that the national parties are now the voter file. What do you mean by this? Have parties given up other functions, or is voter data simply much more important now, and the party's role in this has just become all that more significant? Tell us about this idea of parties becoming the voter file.
Yeah, so parties serve many roles in politics, which I'm sure your listeners know. I mean, they help connect candidates to consultants, for example. They vet candidates. They decide generally the outcome of primaries. They, you know, provide important institutional resources. They manage voter files. They provide candidate training. All those functions are still with us, and they haven't gone away. And I think parties as institutions remain central to the American political process. What I was trying to capture there was something that emerged really inductively in the course of researching this book and talking to scores of campaigners and practitioners, both within parties and campaigns. But it's the idea that voter files in particular have grown far more central to contemporary campaigning than they were 10 or even 20 years ago. And to go back to my earlier example, voter files now underpin all aspects of contemporary campaigning. So they've taken on a new role. I just gave the example before of the Obama team in 2012, more finely targeting cable advertisements on the basis of using set-top box data provided by certain third parties that make cable viewership habits readily available. That's just one example. I mean, we can sort of go down the line and sort of look at every aspect of contemporary campaigning. So canvassing, for example, field campaigning or political in Republican parlance, right? The idea that you're going to try to figure out on the basis of data who your supporters are going to be at a moment in time, who might be supporting the other candidate, are people open to persuasion, how likely are they to vote, all comes down to the basic data that's provided in the voter file. The voter file are these massive files, upwards of 700 data points on every member of the electorate within the Democratic Party, that contain all sorts of things, including public information, which campaigns obtain from secretaries of state. So this would be party registration. It would be turnout history. And then, as Etan Hirsch has written in a wonderful book called Hacking the Electorate, It also includes in some states things like race and ethnicity data. But that varies. But that forms the core of the voter file. And then what parties do around that is they supplement that data with things like commercial records that they purchase from outside third parties, which do things like credit histories and magazine subscription lists and the like. And then also, very importantly, is the voter file that both parties maintain that's a history of their canvas contacts. So every time somebody comes to your door, and living in North Carolina, I get to witness this firsthand, but every time a canvasser for, let's say, a presidential campaign comes to your door and asks you a set of questions about who you're supporting during an election and what sorts of issues matter to you, well, that data gets entered back into the voter file of the political party that that canvasser is from. And that then becomes a record of a campaign contact and information about you that later campaigns will then draw on as well. What I think I mean to capture when you quoted that sentence was simply the idea that the voter file is increasingly important to all aspects of contemporary campaigning. And it's often the what Zach Moffitt, the digital director for the Romney campaign in 2012 campaign, called the North Star. It is the thing towards which all aspects of the campaign is oriented towards. It helps set electoral strategy. It helps you figure out which voters do you need to reach. It helps you test messaging. It helps you figure out which doors to knock on. It helps set your get out the vote plan on election day. It helps you determine which media markets you're going to be in. It helps you figure out how you're going to target digital ads on Facebook. So both parties really provide that core piece of infrastructure for campaigning, and it really sort of sets the pace for everything that a campaign does.
Now, you call this entity called Vertica the unsung hero of the Obama campaign in 2012. So for those who've never heard of Vertica, what is it and why was it so important?
Yeah, so it's basically an analytics platform provided by Hewlett-Packard that the Obama re-election team and the Democratic Party used to really support its database infrastructure. And one of the things that was important about Vertica is that it really enabled the campaign to merge multiple forms of data in multiple different formats together in a way that would make that data actionable for the Obama campaign and the Democratic Party in 2012. So one of the stories of contemporary voter data is that we are or campaigners are really swimming in a sea of data. It comes from multiple different sources. It's often very loosely integrated. The data you get back from things like social media analytics platforms looks different than the voter file, looks different than your financial reporting database, looks different than the data that you're getting coming in from the field. What Vertica enabled the Obama team to do was help fit that data together that was coming from multiple sources, and then supported the ability of staffers to do analytics around that data and really sort of figure out what data was actionable in terms of electoral strategy and how were you doing your modeling and which voters did you need to reach out to on election day. It was really a core piece of the infrastructure that tied together all the different data that was coming into the campaign and made it actionable for staffers at both the party and the reelection bid.
Now, we've heard a lot about the Obama campaign and some of it in your previous writing in 2012. But let's talk a little bit about the other party, which had been functioning and innovative and at a very high level in 2004, but over time seems to have sort of changed their approach to technology. How would you characterize the Romney campaign's approach to digital technology? Who was in charge first, and what was their general approach? Were they as successful as you might expect? Tell us about that campaign.
Motivations for this book was really coming after the 2012 election cycle, when there was a whole host of reporting, at least from the outside, about how mismatched the Mitt Romney and the Barack Obama campaigns were in technology, digital media, data and analytics, all these things that I've been talking about thus far, in terms of their approach during the 2012 cycle and the seeming capacities that each campaign had appeared to be quite different, at least in terms of the reporting that was coming out around that cycle. And one of the things that really encouraged me to sort of write a book was trying to figure out, how do I explain that? How do I explain the fact that in 2012, at least on the surface, there seemed to be these big differences between the Barack Obama and the Mitt Romney campaigns when it came to technology and digital media? And what was even more perplexing is that, you know, I was pretty well aware of the political science literature on campaigns, which had generally sort of assumed that, you know, given equal resources, you know, both campaigns on both sides of the aisle would generally arrive at the same strategy, because everyone sort of sees the world in the same way, and there's sort of an objectively good strategy that you would pursue in electoral terms. So everyone would similarly make very, very comparable investments and run very similar campaigns. But one of the things that was really striking is that, well, here I was in 2012, thinking back to my previous book where, you know, I sort of charted the ways in which the Democrats had really built on their failures in 2004 and looked to the Bush campaign in 2004 as a model, and invested significantly new resources in tech and in digital. And I would have expected, given sort of reigning theories, that, you know, the Republicans would have done the same, so that their nominee would have been pretty much on par with Obama come 2012. And yet that seemingly wasn't the case. So that really kicked off starting to research this book. And 4 years later, what it does is sort of chart the history of sort of how the Republican Party sort of evolved or failed to, from really that Bush campaign in 2004 to the Romney bid in 2012. And I think there's a couple key aspects of that history that speaks to sort of your question. So first of all, one of the central claims of the book is that you can't look in isolation at any one electoral cycle to understand the development and the origin of a campaign and the strategies that it adopts. So one of the things that I found time and again is that a lot of the differences between the Democratic and the Republican parties, when it comes to things like technology, digital media, data and analytics, those are built up over time and over the course of many election cycles. And one of the things that I do in the book is actually just look at like patterns of hiring of presidential campaign staffers during the 2004 presidential election, the 2008 presidential election, and the 2012 cycle. And I find vast disparities between Republicans and Democrats just in terms of staffing, hiring staffers in these areas on presidential campaigns. The other thing that I found with respect to differences between the Republican and Democratic parties is that not only were Democrats hiring more in the areas of technology, digital media, data and analytics, but they were also drawing a lot more talent from the technology industry. So this is, you know, high tech sector companies. These are, you know, commercial data firms. These are folks who have a specialized set of skills or are coming out of an industry that's technology intensive. And what they're doing is carrying these skills and carrying this expertise and this technological know-how into politics. And the Democrats seem to just be a lot better at attracting these new talents and these new staffers into politics and helping them run their campaigns. And then the third big difference that I found when looking at the data, along with my graduate students, was just Democrats also had much higher rates of new organizational founding after their presidential election. So not only were they hiring more staffers, those staffers were then going on to launch new firms and new organizations that were taking the innovations of their presidential campaigns and then carrying them down ballot and bringing them across election cycles in ways that future Democratic campaigns could use. So on the Democratic side, I think in a lot of ways, this explains their technologically sort of forward campaigns. And one of the things that happens by virtue of that is I think over time, the Democratic Party just came to value technology, digital media, data and analytics in ways that the Republican Party did not. And just to give you a few examples of this, on Democratic campaigns, Obama in particular, but more generally across the board, there was more hiring done in tech, digital media, data and analytics. Those staffers had more autonomy to ply their trade. They were given more resources. There was a much more robust infrastructure, like Obama's email list and small dollar donor list, as well as the technological and digital media savvy to know how to effectively raise money through email, how to do things like optimization testing and A/B testing. All of these were a set of skills and infrastructure that the Democrats had built up within their party network really after the 2004 cycle and carried forward to 2012 and now into 2016. On the Republican side of the aisle, there was a bit of a different story after 2004. One of the arguments that I make in my book is that the Bush team was so dominant in 2004 in really every aspect of contemporary campaigning over the Democrats and John Kerry that there was little incentive for them to sort of rethink the way that they were doing things. The Bush team in 2004 just had much better internet operations than John Kerry at the time. They had things like online virtual precinct captain programs that were integrated with field. They had a much more sophisticated national voter database, much better field operations and turnout operations. They were running experimental tests to figure out how to best turn people out. So they were so far ahead. And then after 2004, there was little incentive to sort of build on that and continue innovating. Meanwhile, heading into the 2008 election, the Republicans faced a very strong set of electoral headwinds. They had a very unpopular incumbent. The party wasn't well off financially. It was coming off of pretty devastating midterm elections in 2006. And John McCain's bid for the presidency in 2008 was really a shoestring operation and a come from behind victory. What that meant is that John McCain just didn't have anywhere near the number of resources to invest in things like technological infrastructure and hire staffers that the Obama campaign did. And that was the context coming out of 2008. And the thing is that even though John McCain lost in 2008 and a number of practitioners in the Republican Party were sort of concerned that Obama seemed to run this very technology intensive campaign and very social media intensive campaign in 2008, a lot of Republicans expected John McCain to lose, as did many political scientists, which I think is an important part of the story, is that all the great tech in the world wouldn't have given John McCain a victory in 2008 with a deeply unpopular incumbent, the president's party sitting in the White House. But I think what happened was is that a lot of Republicans didn't really feel the urgency to adopt similar innovations to what the Obama campaign had done in 2008. And then work that happened within the Republican Party in the years after 2008, in turn, really got lost under Michael Steele's chairmanship, where even the investments that were made ultimately had to be sacrificed given really mounting debts and the fact that Michael Steele had a very sort of embattled chairmanship, to say the least. And I think this was the context that the Romney campaign started to take shape in 2012. And what that meant in a couple of really important ways is that even by the time the primary started, the Romney campaign was starting off significantly behind the Obama campaign when it came to basic party infrastructure. So the voter data that the Romney team was inheriting compared to with what the Obama team was inheriting from the Democratic Party just simply wasn't nearly as robust and didn't have the advantage of being enriched by the millions of voter contacts that Obama engaged in 2008. The email list that the Romney team inherited from the party in 2012 was simply less developed. And he also encountered a much less robust pool of small dollar donors that take cycles to really develop and cultivate. Romney also faced a very contested primary in 2012. And that meant ultimately fewer resources. It meant less time to engage in technological development within the campaign. While Obama was enjoying what I call in the book a technical advantage of incumbency, having a year to run unopposed meant lots of time to raise money and to spend them on large-scale infrastructural technological projects. And then it also meant, referring to the history that you mentioned before, that within the Romney campaign itself, there was a much less autonomous role for digital. Whereas on the Obama campaign, his digital staffers, for instance, very much had a seat at the senior staffer table and had autonomy to do things like produce content for social media. I think most of the Romney practitioners who were on the campaign would sort of agree that they faced a lot more scrutiny and a lot more vetting for the content that they were putting out online. And the campaign itself had a very communications heavy approach that was really oriented around broadcast advertising, less so this field approach and this digital first approach that the Obama 2012 campaign had adopted. And again, I think all of this is not simply the product of the whims of any one electoral cycle or any one campaign manager, but was really sort of rooted in the fact that the two parties as networks had evolved quite differently in the years after 2004.
Yeah, Dan, I learned so much in everything that you've written. I enjoyed the previous book, and there's just dozens and dozens of things to learn from this new book, which is called Prototype Politics, Technology-Intensive Campaigning and the Data of Democracy, published this year by Oxford University Press. Dan, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Heath. I appreciate it.